I don't have to remind you tonight, huh?
No, I just kind of jump-started things.
Yeah, you see me when I get on and you know, oh, I got to record. I better do it before she tells me. How's everybody doing?
Doing good, thanks, Diane.
You bet. I'm going on vacation Friday.
Where are you
I'll be
headed
gone for
to?
3 weeks. I'm going to go to St. Pete.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we usually go to Sanibel, but the hurricane wiped it off the map.
Wow.
So, yeah, so we're going to go
That's
to St.
right. They
Pete
had
for
a lot
3 weeks.
of damage, didn't they?
Yes, the causeway to get over there. But anyway, I'll take my tablet and I'm hopefully going to be able to join the meetings, okay?
Okay, we're good.
Yeah.
Which
I haven't missed you all
reminds
too much.
me, I need to remember to say this to everybody, but maybe you can remind me as well. Next week, we are going to be out of town. So we will not
Next
be out
Tuesday.
of class next week on
Okay.
Tuesday.
All right.
I will try and send out a reminder of that, but I'd like to do it out loud as well when everybody gets online.
Okay.
Let's see, how are we here?
How's everyone doing?
Got a car. Good. Paul, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
How's the California?
California today is quite lovely.
Oh, it's lovely here in Kentucky today. Beautiful.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes.
Where came from?
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
From within.
I'm not bored. I'm not tired.
Well,
at least I don't think I am.
Dear Diane is humming again.
I'm always humming.
Here you are.
I better put myself on mute.
Okay. I know we got a few more people waiting on a bit. There we go, our Indiana contingent signing in. And our Florida vacation people signing in.
Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Kathy, welcome.
Thank you. It's glad to, I'm glad to be here. How's everybody doing?
Good. How about
okay.
you?
Good. We got winter back today for a while, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, a bit.
It's okay. Are you all leaving for Chicago this next week?
Yes, we are. So we will not be having class next week.
Okay.
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 So we could possibly try and squeeze it in, but our schedule is very, very unpredictable when we're up there.
Right.
Usually there's always something that's going on attracting our attention. So I think it's a lot easier just to say, well, we'll hold one another in the light on Tuesday evening.
Okay.
Right.
Know that we will be present to and with one another in the coming week.
Yes. Because you should be present with your family.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Thanks for letting me know that again.
Yes.
Let's see.
Are we class next Sunday?
Pardon me?
Are we still doing Sunday?
Yeah, we'll still be doing Sunday.
Okay.
Will you all just be gone a week, Jerry?
Pardon me?
Just 1 week you're gone?
Just 1 week. We're going to be leaving on Monday and coming back on either Thursday or Friday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, I do have one other, well, I'll mention this to the Sunday people. I forget what date it is. I think it's the 16th. Let me check my calendar here. I know I'll mention this again to everybody. Let's see what on Sunday. Yeah. Sunday the 16th, for those of you who are part of the Sunday class, I probably will not be having class on the 16th because I'm doing the music during the service. And I know they're going to need to have a rehearsal and a sound check and a couple of other things that are going to hop into that space. So I'll remind you of that later, but just in case I forget. Okay, I think we're all here. Well, most of us are all here. As I like to say in AA, we're all here because we're not all there.
That's exactly right.
It describes this beautifully.
That is truth.
The good one.
I love that. And if you didn't have a sense of humor, it wouldn't be funny, right?
Yeah. How could we all be here if we were there?
Yeah, right.
That's presuming there is a here and a there.
Right. It could all be an illusion, you know.
That's right.
It could just keep going on.
What do you mean by here?
Yeah, right.
What is here? How is here different than there? That's deeper than than we're giving credit for. It's very deep.
Well, as somebody reminded me of Tuesday, that wonderful quote from the Greek philosopher Heraclitus. He said, you can't step in the river twice. The river is different and you're different.
Yeah.
So what we think is now has already been passed. Oh, I'm right in the moment. No, you're not, because it's already gone. Okay.
<It's true>.
Let's take a couple of minutes to just settle in. Wonderful to be able to laugh about it. Just to settle in, become in tune with your breathing. And then allow the rhythm of your breath just to take over. You don't have to do anything forced or push it. Just let it happen. So my breath finds its own natural rhythm. And I wonder what it would be like if we could walk through a day or even an hour in a day with that same kind of peacefulness, connectedness, even when we're open with all of our five senses and our intellect and all of this stuff, all of the information that that gathers, if we did not have to be terribly distracted by all of that, we still know when to put our foot on the brake. We still knew the difference between a green light and a red light. We did all of those things that are necessary for our survival. And yet we are in a whole other realm of awareness. Like watching a sunset or holding a child or listening to a favorite piece of music. Just being absolutely both still and present at the same time. And know that in a moment, we are going to tune into our five senses again, and our intellect, our thinking mind. And we allow those aspects of our persona to play out the way they do. And at the same time, we realize that we don't have to let our five senses and our intellect define ourselves or define the world that we live in. We are more than that. And all of the faces we see on the screen, even if some of the names are just, even if the pictures are blocked out, that you are more than a name on a screen, you are more than a face on the screen. And we are both one, all one, and we're also walking one another home. We are both. We are already home. And we're walking home, we're both. The mind cannot comprehend since it always wants to create a duality. Either you're this or you're that. You can't be both. And yet we are saying this evening, you are both. And they do not need to struggle with one another. One does not have to be better than the other. I am one, I am whole, and I am growing towards wholeness and oneness even more completely. So you can take a deep breath and open your eyes when you're ready. We are going to begin on page 94, the beginning of a new chapter. And if you don't have a book, that's fine. We read everything out loud anyway. Chapter 5, called The Reclamation of the Divine. And for those of you who might be new, we are using another one of Paul Selig's books called Realization Beyond the Known. Beyond what is known with the thinking mind, you might say. And as usual, if ever you have any comments or questions or things you would like to elucidate on, please feel free to jump in anytime. In looking over tonight's lesson, it's a really interesting one because we're using words to describe something that goes beyond words. The Bee Gees had a song called Words, and words are all I have. Well, we have more than that, but we use words so much and so often as a way of describing something, grasping something, getting a hold. We even use those words, getting a hold of something. And tonight's reading or tonight's work is going beyond some of that. So I'm going to ask myself to do this. I'm going to ask you guys to do this as well. To as best you can, to suspend your intellect and let whatever needs come to you, come to you. Don't try to understand it or define it or say, well, what does that mean? Don't worry about if your mind does not know what it means, because this is not addressing the mind. This is not an intellectual lesson. It's not one that you're supposed to wrap up with a little bow and say, yes, I understand that. In fact, it might be a really, really wonderful thing to rest in mystery every once in a while. In other words, what would it be like if my mind didn't understand that? Could I still be there or let go of my need to define? See, I'm a great one for that. Margo knows I do this all the time. I'm always looking for the answer. Mm-hmm. I want to define it. I want to put it in a box. I remember a therapist who was working with me years ago said, you know what you're like? He said, you're like this great hunter who's going through this jungle. And you happen to hit this bush, and out of this bush flies this marvelous, beautiful, just outrageously beautiful. You can't even define it, this beautiful butterfly. And what you want to do is you want to catch the butterfly and pin it in a jar so you can take it home with you. And you miss the wonder and beauty that's right in front of you. So don't worry about catching the butterfly tonight. If you can, if I can, let's just enjoy the beauty of it without the explanation. Somebody say, well, why is that so beautiful? I couldn't tell you why that butterfly is so beautiful. In fact, it was almost stupid of me to try and figure out a way to describe it to you. It would be like me saying, well, if you don't see it's beautiful, I can't make you see that. It just is. And that could be true with something as simple as the flame of a candle. Or child's laughter. So I'm going to go through this very slowly. And I'm going to try and shut up every once in a while. Because the words themselves are not important. The vibration of the truth that is coming to each one of us, that's what's important. And for each one of us, it might be different. the reclamation of the divine. To justify what you have known, to decide what has happened was what needed to happen, is only appropriate at the level of the small self. The divine as you has a comprehension of necessity born only in the present moment. She did not resurrect the past to dissect it. She does not seek to rationalize, to have confer her idea of what was, has been, or could have been. She accepts an event as an outpicturing of consciousness that was past. Without embolization, which simply means she is not looking to confer great meaning upon an event. It is something else that was. It happened. It's gone. It happened. It's gone. It happened. It's gone. But. Now, if you look at your own lives and see how much time you spend looking at the past, deciding what was, what had great meaning, what should never have happened that you are still contending with, you will begin to realize that the present itself is a museum of history and your artifacts are all over and being interpreted again and again and again through the perspective of consciousness you hold at any given moment. In other words, even your perception of an event is going to be different from what it was, let's say, even a few days ago. A friend of mine likes to put it this way. He said, you know, the reason why the rear view mirror is so much smaller than the windshield is because you're supposed to spend most of your time looking out in front of you rather than looking behind you. Still can look behind you once in a while, but don't let that take up most of your time and most of your energy because it ain't there anymore. Once you understand that the only meaning anything has is the meaning you give it, you will begin to move beyond the requirements of history to reinforce itself upon the present moment, and then dictate the future in agreement of what was. Course in Miracles puts it so beautifully. When you bring the past into the present, you create a future just like your past.
Oh.
When you bring the past into the present, you create a future just like your past. Groundhog Day.
Jerry, could you repeat that one thing? The only meaning anything has is...
Yeah. Once you understand that the only meaning anything has is the meaning you give it, that's number one. You are the meaning maker. Teacher Mayan likes to say, you are the meaning maker of your life. You are the one who decides what it means. Once you understand that the only meaning anything has is the meaning you give it, you will begin to move beyond the requirements of history to reinforce itself upon the present moment and then dictate the future in agreement to what was.
Okay.
Did you get that, Paul? Okay.
Yeah, I got it. Thank you, Jerry.
The challenge here is that the lives you lived have been built upon history. So to Paul, it sounds letting go of the history, identifying yourself beyond your history, to Paul sounds impossible. And of course, when we're working out of our small self, our limited consciousness, it is impossible. My limited consciousness is defined by my history. And so Paul, they're addressing Paul very distinctly here. And they're addressing each one of us, I think, as well. Paul says, or thinks this, how do I walk into a room and not call the chair the chair? Or remember the curtains from the day I purchased them? How do I forget what a color is when I don't like the color green and I see it everywhere? What is to stop the memory or the dislike from collaborating with my experience in the present moment? This is a misunderstanding on your part, Paul. Again, if you want the simplest distinction I can make here is seeing the world and seeing ourselves through our lower vibration consciousness and seeing it from a higher vibration of consciousness. Higher vibration of consciousness would start off with a meditation instruction similar to, I have a body, but I have not my body. I have feelings and emotions, but I am not my feelings. I am not my emotions. I have a brain, I have a mind, I have thoughts. And yet I am not my mind, I am not my thoughts. I am more than that. So it is from that sense of I am-ness, not in terms of definition, but beyond the need for definition, that I gather or begin to get an understanding or a sense of who I truly am without my history. How do I walk into a room and not call the chair, or remember the curtains from the day I purchased them? How do I forget what a color is when I don't like the color green and I see it elsewhere? What is to stop the memory or the dislike from collaborating with my experience in the present moment? In other words, let's suppose I'm in the present moment and I'm looking around and saying, I always hated those curtains. Okay, all of a sudden I was in the present moment and bam, I'm out of it again. I'm back into my history. Where you turn on the television, I can never stand that so-and-so. Oh yeah, really? What do you think he did to you? Okay, probably nothing. Not even probably nothing. This is a misunderstanding on your part, Paul. As you ascend in consciousness, your perceptions change. How I see things, how I see myself, changes as you raise in consciousness. How you see things, how your perception changes, and how you perceive anything is a direct action of the consciousness you hold. When you forget a language, when it loses its meaning, you stop relying upon it to communicate your feelings or your needs. You have another language to direct you. I found that rather difficult to understand because I was trying to understand that with my head. So I'm not going to try to explain that to anybody because I don't know whether I can or not. However, what came to my mind was, and I might have used this example before, so if it's too old for you, just ignore it. If you've ever had a time or an instance in your life where you were worried or concerned about something. And really, you know, not making light of that, but you were perceiving it as being something rather heavy duty. And you were worried or concerned about it, and you were either trying to work it out or knowing that I'm worried and concerned about this and I can't do anything about it, but it's still eating my lunch and I'm letting it eat my lunch. And then all of a sudden, something else happens in your life. You get a flat tire or somebody calls on the telephone, and somehow or another, that care, that concern gets sort of pushed to the side someplace. And now you're very much concerned about or very much actively involved in talking to somebody on the phone or helping somebody heal or listening to somebody's difficult or really being present to somebody else. And then the phone conversation or the conversation with the other person is over, or that particular task is done. And there's this little space in time where I stop for a moment and say to myself, now, what was I so worried about? And what is fascinating is in that little split second of time, it's not there. It is just not there. Now, of course, if I give it another 30 seconds, it'll come right back again. But it gives me a notion or an idea that I created that. In some ways, I created it out of nothing when it wasn't even there. And as I'm determined to get that back again, whether that's a piece of guilt or fear or not enoughness or whatever it happens to be. Each of you decides that the way you live your life is predicated either on history or the moment you stand in. And the moment you stand in need not be informed by the tenets of history. Once you understand that, it is you who calls them forth. In other words, you create what is happening in this moment. You create the meaning of this moment, not the outside circumstances, not what was I so worried about. You create the meaning of this particular moment. And what's really interesting, I need to share my gratitude with you for allowing me to do this every week. But see, one of the things that happens for me is that almost of necessity, I need to be in the present moment. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to say next. I'm not thinking about what the next word is, what the next lesson is. How am I going to explain that? It's just there. And I'm so grateful for that, because it's really interesting when I, you know, finally look at the clock again and it's 10 minutes to 8. I go, where'd that go? And I believe that's probably true for most of you as well. We're just here. I sort of flip the switch on my intellect and say, well, yeah, you can do your thing over there somehow or another, but I'm really not interested in trying to figure this out so much as I'm much more interested in being here. The chair is a chair because you know what a chair is through your realization of to history. Don't ask me to explain this because I can't. It still sounds a little bit like gobbledygook to me. I know it's not. All it's telling me is, please let go of your history, because your history is not present anymore. It's just your history. But friends, everybody looking at me and me here, we're all sitting in a chair. And they're all different chairs. So what's a chair? Is the one you're sitting in? The one the person next to you is sitting in? The one I'm sitting in? The one you sat in yesterday? Or is that just a word that I have that describes something that allows me to sort of my own internal Dewey Decimal System and say, oh, that's a chair. I don't know about you. Then I feel really comfortable because I've categorized that. I don't have to think about defining that anymore. I know exactly what that is. It's a chair, even though it doesn't look like the other chairs. The sky is called the sky. That's a name. It's just a name. It's a word, a couple letters. And the properties of the sky as shared construct are understood by you in a collaborative field, a shared idea. And the language you use to describe it reclaims it as it has been claimed since the first thing that was called the sky, in fact, was something other prior to its name. When you're watching a sunset, especially when you become really absorbed in the beauty of it, or a rainbow, or a baby, you're not thinking about the beauty of it, you are in it. You are not saying, oh, this is a beautiful sunset. You're in the sunset. It is part of you. You're resonating, you're vibrating with that as being the truth of the beauty that you are experiencing right now. It is beyond language. If you walk into a forest and it's filled with oak trees and maples and elms and aspens, and you're just enjoying the beauty of it, you don't stop for a minute and say, oh, that, look at that, oh, look at that maple tree over there. It should be an oak tree. You realize the ridiculousness of that kind of you know, limited awareness. You just are in the beauty of that. You're not making a distinction between one or the other. It all kind of coalesces as being true for you, as being part of the whole picture, without definition. So somebody could say to you afterwards, well, why is that sunset so beautiful? Was it as good as yesterday's? And you realize there's no way of describing that. How do I tell a blind person what blue looks like? Then I realize that blue is just a word. And my understanding goes far beyond any conceptual basis there.
Yeah, Jerry?
Yo, save me.
Hey, Jerry, this reminds me of an Eckhart Tolle video, and Alan Watts talked about it too, is when an adult and a child are out in nature. And let's say a blue and white bird flies by and the children is like, oh, how pretty. And the adult says, well, that's a blue jay. And as soon as we name it and label it, so we engage the conceptual mind, he calls it the conceptual mind, and we reduce that thing. We take away the aliveness and the beauty and we put a label on it. Oh, I know what that is. Oh, that's just a blue jay. And the same thing with the trees. There's a big difference between disengaging from the conceptual mind in a woods and enjoying the space between the trees, how some are taller, some are shorter, some have more bark, some have less, you know, and absorbing the beauty of that creation, the divinity of it, versus categorizing them. Oh, that's an oak, that's a sycamore. And, you know, having a scientific background, I tend to, my crutch is that scientific conceptual mind, and it takes away the aliveness from that creation. And, you know, Alan Watts says, he talks about that a lot, about that is not a tree, you know. Tree is the English word that we have for that, that starts with T and ends with E. No one knows what that thing is. It's alive. So it's almost like we're switching from, I guess, the conceptual, the left hemisphere to the right hemisphere of the brain. And that's kind of what it feels like you're talking about in the book is talking about, is how do we engage that childlike wonder and not think that we know and categorize and define these things. Because as we do that, we just suck the life and the newness out of it.
Yeah. You're right.
You know?
Let's suppose we coined a word, treeness. And that when I am in the forest, I'm experiencing, I am in the midst of the energy of treeness. Okay. I can't define it. It's bigger than the word, but it expresses the essence of this thing or this group of things that I am part of. There was a song written by Peter Mayer called Everything is Holy Now. And the last verse of it says, this morning outside I stood and saw a little red-winged bird shining like a burning bush and singing like a scripture verse. He almost got trapped in the birdness of it, all right, but expanded that whole thing into this beautiful, what a marvelous line, right? Shining like a burning bush, singing like a scripture verse. Wow. So far beyond. Okay, with the thinking mind could be able to grasp. Thank you for that, Greg. Now I'm wondering,
Jerry,
yeah.
It says the challenge here is that the lives you live have been built upon history. And my history has been taught to me.
Right.
That's the only way that I know how to explain anything is by what has been taught to me.
Right.
And now I'm learning a lot of what has been taught to me is a misconception of what really is, just like you said. My brother didn't do anything to me. I perceived it that way because I was taught that way. If somebody's rude and they speak out, my mind automatically says, well, how rude? Because I've been taught. And that's my judgment from what I've been taught. And that's my history. I mean, I guess my point is, I wouldn't know how to explain anything without history.
Okay. And that's true on a lower level of our understanding. You reminded me of another song, Diane. I've usually got music going through my head. So this one's by Harry Chapin. It's called Flowers Are Red. It's about a little boy who goes to school, starts school. And the teacher he has is just this marvelous created lady who says, now get out all of your crayons and I want you to make flowers. And flowers can look like anything you want them to look like. They can be any color of the rainbow. And so the little kid is making his drawings of flowers and he brings it home and it goes on the refrigerator and it's just absolutely beautiful. And he's having a grand old time with it. His parents move and he goes to a different school. Comes art class, he pulls out all his crayons and and the teacher goes, what are you doing? He said, I'm drawing flowers. She said, oh no, flowers don't look that way. Flowers are red and green leaves are green. And she gives him one of these little lollipop flowers, okay, with a little red circle and two little leaves coming out the side. He said, that's what a flower looks like. And he objected to that for a while. So he objected to it so loudly, she had him stand in a corner. Until he was willing to come back out and draw flowers the way she said you draw flowers. And then the family moved again. He came to another school, and the art teacher this time was just like the first art teacher he had. She had colors all over the place and said, you know, let's draw flowers today and take out all of your crayons and just do whatever you want to do with them. And he's sitting by his little desk drawing these little lollipop flowers. And she's saying, oh, you know, you can do that if you want to, but flowers are so much more than that. He says, no, flowers are red. Green leaves are green.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, it breaks my heart.
That's sad.
Program, sorry.
He was programmed. Yeah.
Absolutely.
He was taught.
Taught.
Greg, I'm sorry I missed what you said. I had an appointment phone call I had to take, so I'm sorry I missed what you said. I know it was important.
Well, you will get what's important for you. Another song reminiscent of all of this, taking it out of the physical realm, in the musical South Pacific, there's a song described, you have to be taught, you have to be carefully taught to hate, to be prejudiced. You're not born that way. You're not mm-hmm. born judgmental. You have to be taught that. This is the black is this, you're this, you're this, you're this, you're this. And so we are the result, up until maybe a while ago or whatever length of time that might be, we are the result of, as Diane pointed out, of what we learned from other people. The way I like to think about it is all the people who told me who I was didn't know who they were. I didn't know that at the time. Mm-mm. I didn't know they were living out a limited consciousness. I mean, where do you go? Your parents and your church and your school tell you this is right, this is correct, this is the way it's supposed to be. Well, who do you object to?
And they were living out of the same thing.
I didn't know
what they had been told.
I know Margot had a different experience. Margot said, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. I was too afraid to say that or even to think that.
Oh,
I was
no.
So wrapped up in my own little fearful cocoon of not making waves, of not challenging authority, quote, authority, right? Mm-hmm. Not only would I not even dare to say anything like that, I had it pushed down so tightly, I wouldn't even dare to question it. It wasn't until much, 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 much later on that I even gave myself permission to look at things a little bit more deeply and depend on not my own inner, but the inner awareness, the God consciousness, the divine consciousness within. To begin to listen to that in a way that it spoke to me in truth, mm-hmm. and knowing that that was the truth, much more than what I've been taught. I'm not saying the people who taught me were evil or bad. They were teaching me the same way they got mm-hmm. taught. And I think that's one of the reasons why the world is in this huge shift in consciousness. Because there are groups like this that are going on all around the world, and the consciousness is being raised to a level that you can't go back to the way it was. You just can't. Won't fit in. It'll be like if you ever went to Walgreens or CVS, and at the checkout counter they have these little raincoats in these little plastic envelopes, you know. And if you've ever taken it out of the, do you ever try to put it back in the envelope? Doesn't work anymore. Okay, it's not going back, man. Okay, it's not going back. And
I'll have to watch that. For that. I have not seen that, or I am not looking for it.
It's wonderful. Funny. It ain't going back.
Nope.
We're on page, what are we on? 95.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll do this paragraph and then we'll do a meditation. Unless you got something else you want to add to this, which is perfectly fine. Prior to its name, Paul says, what does that mean? Before I had a face, before I had a name, you held me in the palm of your hand. Before I had a face, before I had a name, held me in the palm of your hand. Prior to its name, what does that mean? Very simply put, everything that has a name was once nameless. Wasn't a category, wasn't part of the Dewey Decimal System that, you know, you plug into this particular envelope. Can you understand this? To move to the nameless is to move beyond language. And as languages move beyond, the heredity that language would cost you is actually dismantled. But we love language, he says. It's how we communicate. You can't take language away from us. We are not taking language away from you. We are actually giving you a new one. But in order for something to be made, and we've been through this principle before, in order for something to be made new, it needs to move to the nameless, to the source of its creation, to be made known as what it has always been. The divine self who knows who she is can be without a name and still be what she is. Who are you without your body, without your mind, without your feelings, without your history? Even when you recognize, even when I recognize, let's say, my divine consciousness, strangely enough, or almost impossibly enough, there's still a sense of identity that goes with that. Not separateness, but a sense of identity. In Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, there were these alien beings who lived in this rather almost like this liquid expanse. They called it the Link, by the way, which was really kind of interesting. And in that link, all of their consciousness was shared with one another. And there was a sense of self, but it was not limited to one, but it was also open to all of these other consciousness that was coming through. And occasionally they would be called back into form. And so as they were called back into form, they would remove themselves from the link and gain physical form again, 2 arms, 2 legs, 10 toes. They would look a little bit different, but they mimicked sort of humanoid form. And then when it was time to go back at the link, they would go in and dissolve back into that again.
Now that's heavy, Jerry.
Hmm?
That's heavy.
It is heavy.
Yeah, it is.
It's a beautiful image.
It really is.
Jerry.
See if I can dig something up like that for you. You don't have to be a Star Trek fan.
Oh, but I am.
How did I know? I'm not.
But Jerry, why am I not surprised?
I'm not. If we were stripped of everything that we are and everything that we know, would we not just be one with God?
Well, see, that's the paradoxical thing, is you already are one with God.
Okay, that's the answer. And then what we would be if we were stripped of everything.
Now, there's an image in Buddhism. And one of the classifications or sects of Buddhism, which is sometimes called the Mahayana. And that's loosely translated as being the big boat or the great vessel. And the philosophy behind that particular form of Buddhism is that the boat to oneness, nirvana, whatever you want to call it, the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. Now, there's a similar image. From A Course in Miracles, if I have this correct, is that Jesus, or the Christ consciousness, is standing at the doorway of oneness with the Father. In other words, you can cross over the threshold and poof, you're one. Not even a sense of individual identity anymore. You are just absorbed into oneness. You are in the link, right? And Jesus, the Christ consciousness, is standing at the door, holding that door open, and says, I could go through that anytime I want to, because I already know to the depth of my being my oneness with the Creator. But I am not going through that doorway. I'm holding it open for everybody to go through. And once everybody's through, then I'm going through. I'm not going through until everybody else has the opportunity to do that. So I know that intellectually it's a rather paradoxical place, that you're one and yet you're living out of separation. But see, part of that is that we choose to be here on planet Earth to sanctify, to bless, to make whole, to heal all of this stuff we're finding here on planet Earth, and to bring it back, you might say, or bring it into the oneness. That includes my own thoughts of separation, my own ideas, my own history of self. Even to bring my history, even though I'm not my history, you are not your history, even bringing my history into the oneness so that it can be sanctified and blessed, because it's part of my experience here on planet Earth. That's part of what I'm here for, to experience in consciousness and to bring that experience back into the wholeness and the oneness, because the oneness, paradoxically, is continually expanding. The oneness isn't just sitting there waiting till everybody gets here. The oneness, unconditional love, the awareness of self is continually expanding. And so part of that continuing expansion is each one of us, in what we are experiencing here on planet, brings that experience back into the oneness, to bless it, to sanctify it, to expand its experience into, and to allow that experience to be blessed, to be healed, to be part of unconditional love. That's one of the reasons why we're here, why we're doing what we're doing. Okay. We're going to take a few minutes. Pause. We spent a lot of words describing what goes beyond words. That's okay. We were just doing what we're doing. I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down if you don't mind. Take a couple of breaths. As we did in the beginning of this evening, to allow you to find the rhythm of your own breathing, to let that take you over gently, lovingly. So you soften, open, calm, serene, peaceful, open, letting go of the mind, letting go of the attachment to the body, letting go of your emotions, your feelings of the moment, letting go of your history, nothing defines me aside from the unconditional love that I am. Nothing defines me aside from the unconditional love that I am. Know that you take all of that with you. And breathe, stretch. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Can I share one other observation with you? You know, that race of beings I was describing from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, who had that sort of a pool of liquid that they went into called the link and shared consciousness. First of all, that's a great metaphor. But secondly, that idea could not have existed unless the human experience was already there for that. It wasn't created out of nothing. Isn't that wild?
That is wild.
So we already know how to do that.
See?
We already know how to do that. On that note, thank you guys for being here. Remember, next week we will be out of town, but we will resume the week after, okay?
So okay, thanks, Jerry.
Love you guys.
Namaste.
Love you guys. Thank you. Marvel, Jerry. Everybody.
Bye, happy Easter.
Thank you for blessing me with your presence. Yes.
See you guys.
Yeah. Good night. Happy Easter.